Welcome to the July 2009 MSF Frontline Reports. Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This month, we launch a new format for the Frontline Reports podcast. We're bringing you a brief collection of emergency updates from MSF projects worldwide, and you might have noticed, some new music. Keep listening for more changes to come. In this month's features, we look at Guatemala City, where MSF is treating 100 new patients every month for sexual violence. Hear how medical and psychological treatment has made a huge difference in one young woman's life.
The response has been wonderful. It's an example of how women, given the right support and being able to believe in themselves, can overcome their situation.
Also, 2 months after Cyclone Ayla devastated eastern India and the coast of Bangladesh, survivors are still struggling to recover. We have an interview with an MSF water and sanitation expert who just returned from Bangladesh.
The damage was overwhelming. There's no other word for it.
But first, this month's emergency updates from some of MSF's projects around the world. Early in July, MSF was forced to close a pediatric hospital and 3 health clinics in the north of Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Open combat between armed groups killed dozens of civilians, and MSF staff, along with much of the civilian population, had to immediately flee northern parts of the city. MSF was treating hundreds of patients, including malnourished children, when it was forced to cease operations in the Yakshid, Karan, and Abdul Aziz districts. Patients were left with little or no medical care. The MSF teams hope to resume operations in the areas when security improves. Despite general insecurity, MSF still manages to work in Somalia. Between April and July, MSF treated more than 400 people for measles in the town of Guri-El and in the Galgaduud region of central Somalia. 40% were treated in their villages through mobile clinics, the rest at an MSF-run hospital. Mobile clinics work particularly well in this area since much of the population is nomadic. MSF is calling on authorities in Greece to ensure humane treatment and access to medical assistance for migrants and asylum seekers who are living at a makeshift camp in the southern port city of Patras. The call followed a police raid at the site on July 12th, which resulted in a fire. Most of the inhabitants were forced to leave the area, losing most of their possessions. MSF was providing medical and mental health care to the camp's residents, most of whom had fled war in Afghanistan. Those with legal papers were sheltered at a hotel, while others were arrested or went into hiding. Many people at the camp were minors, some 13 and 14 years old. All now face an uncertain future. The MSF team in Patras continues to provide medical and psychological assistance, as well as relief items to its patients who have dispersed to different parts of the city. The team managed to visit one of the police stations where some of the undocumented migrants and asylum seekers are being held. It reported unsanitary conditions and no access to medical services. In northern Sri Lanka, medical needs remain huge following the end of the country's civil war in May. While patient numbers have stopped climbing at some hospitals where MSF works in the Vavunya district, bed capacity in all of them is exceeded. MSF doctors have performed more than 5,000 surgeries since February, mostly for war-related injuries. MSF runs a 150-bed hospital near Manik Farm, home to a massive camp for hundreds of thousands of people displaced by the prior fighting. Government health workers inside the camp refer new patients to the hospital. Many are pregnant women and children with illnesses caused by poor living conditions, such as respiratory and skin infections, malnutrition, and diarrhea. But since MSF teams are not permitted to work inside the camp, it's impossible to know the overall health situation. Within 5 years of receiving treatment for HIV/AIDS, 16% of patients at an MSF project in South Africa develop resistance to medication. New AIDS drugs are extremely expensive and HIV funding is stagnant. Thousands of patients in the Khayelitsha area near Cape Town are at serious risk. In July, MSF reported its findings from Khayelitsha at a gathering of 5,000 scientists and public health experts at the International AIDS Society Conference in South Africa. Along with the report, MSF warned that resistance to drugs will increase in Africa. One solution is for drug companies to put their AIDS medications in a patent pool, being created by the International Drug Financing Agency, UNITAID. Pooling of drug patents could provide generic drug producers with licenses in exchange for a fee. Developing countries could then obtain life-saving drugs at more affordable prices. And now, this month's features. In mid-July, MSF began speaking out about the staggering scale of sexual violence in Guatemala. About 10,000 people report being raped in the Central American country every year, one of the highest rates worldwide, and one that does not include countless people who never come forward. MSF teams treat about 100 new patients every month in Guatemala City. In a video now on MSF websites titled Breaking the Cycle of Fear, a patient referred to as Maria courageously tells her own story of sexual violence. From her, we hear how devastating this experience can be and how the right kind of treatment and support can make a dramatic difference. MSF Sandra Murillo spoke to Marisol Rodas, an MSF psychologist who treated Maria.
A few months ago, a 17-year-old girl came into the MSF clinic in Zone 18, one of the most crime-ridden areas of Guatemala City. She was crying uncontrollably and holding a blanket over her horribly beaten face. Her parents were trying to console her, but she was still in turmoil after what had happened to her the previous day. Here, she describes what happened.
On that day, I told my mother I was going to my brother's house, and I went to a bus station about 5 blocks from my house. I was on the bus when a black car crossed the road in front of the bus. Two guys got out of the car and came onto the bus with masks over their faces. They only went to me and nobody else. I couldn't do anything. They pointed a gun at my head and forced me to go with them. Then they blindfolded me and took me to a place I didn't recognize. They took me into a room. They started raping me. They were beating me up. There were 7 of them.
After 8 hours, Maria finally managed to escape. A woman saw her on the street and helped bring her to a health clinic. From there, she was referred to the MSF program for victims of sexual violence. Maria arrived with her parents the following day, when Guatemalan psychologist Marisol Rodas met her. Rodas spoke to me by phone from one of the 2 MSF clinics in Guatemala City.
It was shocking. She was in such terrible shape. The day before she had been kidnapped, 7 people attacked her. She had many bruises and lacerations. Her face was swollen, disfigured. It left a strong impression on everybody on duty that day.
What did you say to her?
At the beginning, I tried to explain that I understood what she was going through, that we wanted to help her, that she could trust us. She was extremely frightened. She could have died, you know. These men's victims often end up dead, abandoned in some desolate place, and she knew that that could have happened to her, so she was terrified. It made a big difference that her parents supported her and that they took her to a place where she could get help.
How did she respond to the initial counseling?
She cried a lot. She was worried about never being able to recover, about having caught a disease, about her face never looking normal again, about staying like that, bruised and battered. She was extremely anxious. After comforting her for a while, she was willing to talk a bit more and to tell me what had happened.
And what happened to her is so shocking. She was kidnapped on a public bus in front of passengers who didn't help her. To be a woman living in Guatemala, it must make you feel that anything could happen to you at any moment.
Maria is a regular girl. She was attending high school and living with her parents, just like everybody else. And there have been many cases of girls being kidnapped while on their way to school and being taken to some place to be raped. Unfortunately, yes, in Guatemala these days, since we have been talking about it and recognizing it, we realize the scope of the problem. There are many cases and different contexts, but the stories have many things in common. Unfortunately, we are treating a lot of cases like Maria's.
After initial counseling, Maria was ready to receive medical treatment. Luckily, she had come to the clinic within 72 hours of the attack, the time frame in which patients can be effectively started on prophylaxis for HIV and given a vaccination for hepatitis B and treated for other sexually transmitted diseases. Despite the massive scale of sexual violence in Guatemala, MSF is still the only provider of complete medical care for these survivors. Every month, the program helps 100 new patients. This is how Maria described the medical side of treatment.
When I came there, they started to check my wounds. They gave me right away about 15 pills. I didn't like them, and even less the injections. They gave me some medication that I had to take for 28 days. Then I waited for the results of my blood test. I was really nervous about being pregnant or HIV positive, but thanks to God and the medication they gave me, the results were all negative.
Much more difficult to treat are the psychological effects. Nearly half of the patients MSF has seen for sexual violence in Guatemala City say they've had suicidal thoughts. Marisol, how do you conduct the longer-term psychological treatment?
Claro. Se rompen muchas cosas. Se rompe tu seguridad. Se rompe.
For the patient, many things are shattered, broken. You lose your sense of security, of contact, and trust. We have to work on all of these issues, and we do that by means of a therapeutic process with at least one session a week. It has been designed in such a way that after five sessions, they can go back to their life and their projects. Sometimes this varies, of course, and it could take much longer.
Many women have feelings of guilt after being raped. Did Maria experience this?
The culpa? Sí, siempre.
Yes, and that is something very common in victims of sexual violence, to think, if I hadn't taken that bus, if I hadn't gone out that day, why did I? Why wasn't I able to do anything? Guilt is a topic we approach almost from the very beginning. It is important for them to understand that it is not because of anything we do, not because of anything they might have done, that they have become victims of sexual violence.
What was the hardest thing for Maria to overcome?
For Maria, a major issue was her safety, because she was at risk of being taken again. So initially, she was placed with a relative somewhere else. Later on, when she returned to her home, there was always somebody with her, a girlfriend, her parents. She had to learn to trust again, and to know that there are people who love and support her.
And how did Maria respond to therapy?
The response has been wonderful. It's an example of how women, given the right support and being able to believe in themselves, can overcome their situation. She had her parents' support and attended all her sessions in a timely manner. We have other cases where there was no family support or where parents don't believe the girl and tell her, well, maybe you did want this, maybe you did incite that violence, or cases in which they just don't believe them. Then recuperation is much more difficult and takes more time.
In late May, Cyclone Ayla caused massive damage to eastern India and the coast of Bangladesh. Survivors still have received little aid and are struggling to regain normalcy. MSF is providing medical assistance, distributing relief items, and repairing water sources for some 15,000 people in India and 75,000 people in Bangladesh. Kathy Didieu, an MSF water and sanitation specialist, recently returned from Bangladesh and was interviewed by MSF's Melissa Precht.
So, Kathy, where did you go and what was the makeup of the team that you went with?
So I went to southwest Bangladesh in an area known as Satkira and Khulna. And our team was made up of medical mobile clinics. There were about nine different clinics and three medical teams that went around to the different nine places on a rotational basis. Most of them were national staff, of course. Everywhere MSF goes, so of course, the most important part of it is the national staff. These were very remote villages where no one spoke English. And so the national staff helps to make the connection and get the information and get things going.
How widespread was the damage to these communities that you went to?
The damage was overwhelming. There's no other word for it. Villages mainly exist either at sea level or below sea level. So I say it's very similar to New Orleans, where a lot of it is at or below sea level. They had these embankments or levees surrounding the villages and the islands, and they broke in several places. And the tidal surge was about 10 or 12 feet higher. And you can see the level of the tidal surge and the damage that was done. But then now, even 2 months later, you still have daily flooding. So, again, if I use the example of Katrina, in Katrina, where the flooding happened, they actually could fix the levee in a few days. They had helicopters and sandbags and things like this. That's not the situation in Bangladesh. The levees were broken in 50 different places, and the people are fixing them by hand. So they are fishing all night, and usually they sleep during the day, and instead of sleeping, they're fixing these levees.
What are the effects on individuals? You talked about people working day and night to fix these levees. What are some of the other effects?
The big effect is just their livelihood. They are mainly fish farmers and shrimp farmers, and they would keep fish and shrimp ponds inside the islands, and all of those were destroyed. In places where they grow rice, the rice fields were salinated, so that also affected the rice fields. So one of the other things that MSF is keeping a close eye on is malnutrition that might happen. So although Bangladesh might not have a nutritional crisis, this area might have it because the people lost everything. They lost their livelihood. So there might be, one of the things we look at is to see if, you know, in the coming months we see a malnutrition problem.
In a journal that you wrote, which is on MSF websites, you describe different water systems that each community has and how MSF has been helping to repair them. In one area, the island of Padmapukur, the community gets their water from tube wells, and you and your team, quote, shocked the tube wells. Can you tell us what that means?
So to shock a well, a tube well is just like a well or a pump. They call them tube wells where they are. But so what shocked means is in sort of water speak is to shock with chlorine. So chlorine is a great way to sort of kill bacteria that might have come with the storm. I mean, of course, with the storm you had all this storm sewage that's quite dirty, and it went down into their tube well. And so you add a large amount of chlorine down into the well, and then you pump out several volumes of the well to make sure that you kind of clean it out. It's a way to kind of clean it out and get fresh water in there and kill any bacteria that might be in there. On top of that, what we had to do is actually raise the pumps above high tide because, remember, high tide keeps coming in every day.
And the sewage must have also been affected in the area.
Yeah, all the latrines were flooded or destroyed. They had two different kinds of latrines. One was just a hole in the ground, the old reliable latrine, and they had them at the household level. And then they also had a latrine that sort of went out over the river and was knocked away when the cyclone came. So latrines and sanitation were a huge priority in MSF. MSF is in the process of building several new latrines in the area to try and, again, improve that sanitation situation for the people so they can stay healthy. Both the drinking water and the sanitation are just a way to try and keep the patients healthy. I mean, we don't do Watsan. We don't do water and sanitation for water and sanitation's sake. We do it to try and keep our patients healthy.
When you were there, did you see many other aid organizations or the government actually helping people get back on their feet?
Yes, I did see both. I saw both other organizations and the government helping the people. There was plenty of work for everybody to do. Let me say it like that. Bangladesh in particular has sort of annual troubles with flooding and with storms. You know, this cyclone didn't really make any headlines. And so you didn't have that sort of outpouring that you often have with large natural disasters, this outpouring of help that you often see. So there were NGOs that helped, and there was assistance from the government, but not at an enormous scale considering the amount of damage that was done.
For more information about MSF's activities and for updates on other underreported humanitarian emergencies, please visit our websites at msf.org or doctorswithoutborders.org. Thank you for listening to this edition of MSF Frontline Reports. Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization delivering emergency assistance to people affected by wars, epidemics, and natural or man-made disasters in more than 60 countries around the world.